Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to the Niall and Nine podcast. It is myself, Niall and Andre Cleary. Pew, pew, pew. On episode 193 of the Niall and Nine podcast, we are going to be talking mainly about live music this week, I think, Andrea. And the gigs we have been to, like Kendrick Lamar and Pavement in the last week, the gigs we actually attended, and then the ongoing hullabaloo around the secondary ticketing market, thanks to Taylor Swift, of course, in for that, and the ever-problematic Grammy Awards, as reliable as ever. But as reliable as ever here with me is Andrea Cleary. How are you doing?
Stop. I'm good. I just had a little bite of a brownie and it was delicious.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Has it really been a week? Has it actually, or has it been 2 weeks?
The days do be flying.
They do be fine. It's cold. I've got my hot water bottle with me. I've got my, frankly, obscene mug, which is just giant, nearly the size of my head. So, yeah, it's here.
Giant mug.
It's all happening.
Yeah. Big cup of coffee
I'm
right beside
very,
me here.
Very excited to, I'm not sure if we're going to start with this, but I'm very excited to hear about your experience at Kendrick Lamar.
Well, let's start there. It was a big gig.
And I enjoyed your piece on the Niall and Nine website. Everyone should go and read it.
Thanks. It's nice to do an old live review.
I know. I saw it pop up and I was like, oh, haven't had a little piece from Niall in a while, a little opinion piece.
It's hard. You know, it is hard to find the time to do stuff like that. And I think I want to do loads of big features all the time, but like it's really hard in the day to day to find time to do it, especially as it's basically me now again since the pandemic. So that's very tough to do that. But yeah, it was nice to sit down and like recount my experience of it. Like, you know, I think in the lead up to this gig, the only thing I really knew about it is that it didn't seem to be maybe selling that well for some reason. And I think maybe it's down to ticket prices and a younger generation who don't have that kind of cash to splash around and, you know, who have to be convinced that maybe spending 70 quid on a ticket for a gig is something you want to do. Also, you know, as we discussed and we reviewed Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, this is the Mr. Morale, the Big Steppers tour. Basically, it is a very dense album. It is a very introspective album. It's maybe, I don't think, I mean, I'll ask you a question. Have you listened to Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers since we reviewed it?
I have, but
much?
I'd say I've listened to certain songs from it quite a lot, but straight through, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would change if I had the LP, which I don't, but I think I'd be more likely to put it on. But if I'm just putting it on Spotify, I'll just kind of listen to a couple of the songs. Yeah.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting because I think maybe, I wouldn't say it was exactly tepid, the reaction, but I think because of the nature of the album being as it is, like that it is quite a difficult album to listen to in lots of ways.
The reaction was like looking back on it, a little bit bizarre as it tends to be with kind of big albums like this. But when you get someone who's as lyrically dense and complex as Kendrick, and people trying to kind of, you know, formulate their opinion really, really quickly and give it 5 stars or give it 2 stars or declare that it's a perfectly average album after even only a week with it. I mean, I think you and I, we reviewed it, we recorded our review a week or so after it came out. And even at that point, we were still really up in the air with it, and we still, you know, we felt like we had a lot more work to do with it. So yeah, I think the reaction to it was one of kind of panic across both the music press and kind of rap fans and Kendrick fans, you know.
Well, I guess that's the thing, you know, I mean, it is worth saying that album reviews, I mean, one of the reasons why I don't really do them anymore in the traditional format is because they are snapshots. Let's be honest, there's no definitive, you know, telling of an album, and especially when you're rushing to kind of address something like such a big album. I prefer the discussion that we do in terms of how we feel about it at the time, and sometimes you go back and listen to it and you're like, well, I feel totally different about that album now. But you know, that's what time does, that's what listening does, that's what repeated listens do. But I think, yeah, Mr. Marlon and the Big Steppers was an album that I'm not sure where it's going to sit, because I've started to think about the end of the year, you know.
And No.
Yeah, well, I have to. It's 16th of November. We've got a month left. I want to get this done and dusted before the end of the year. But, you know, I don't know where that's going to sit. I don't know yet. I'm going to figure that out. But I think it's because, you know, the album is, because it's informed by like the vernacular of therapy and like the inner self and like ego and stuff like that. There's a lot of, you know, references there's a lot of things, but what that does in terms of the gigs is that does give it a framework in which to hang these songs through. So on the night, you know, I mean, had you seen the Glastonbury performance? Because I think, yes, I was kind of expecting more of that.
I watched the Glastonbury performance live, and I have to say, actually, it recontextualized and gave me a way into the album that led me to listen to the album a lot more after the Glastonbury performance. I think he's such a brilliant visual performer that really helped me. So yeah, I'm very curious about the similarities and differences.
Yeah,
there.
I was kind of expecting much the same, but maybe on a slightly bigger stage, but it was actually quite different. Obviously the Glastonbury main stage, the Pyramid stage, doesn't have the wherewithal to bring a big plinth out into the crowd, and that was one of the main differences, and he spent a lot of time on that, which also meant that he was basically in the middle of the crowd for a lot of the show. And then that allows, obviously, the productions as well. I mean, like, there was some beautiful touches. It was all very, like, it was quite basic. A lot of it reminded me of, like, the floor was like, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, the Star Wars film, where Han Solo's getting frozen. There's a lot of, like, that kind of, like, great steel and stuff like that. And it's all muted gray. And there's a big drape that hangs for a lot of the show. Like, it goes up and down throughout the show. And sometimes there are dancers behind it, and sometimes there's nothing behind it. It's just he is out on his own doing his own thing. Mm. Other times there's like he has a piano at the start.
He's in a box sometimes.
Yeah,
well.
So he had, there's a,
I saw TikToks of in England people going na 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 na.
Oh, is that where it came from? Because that's
Kendrick's
what happened.
In a box. Kendrick's in a box, which I thought was really funny.
Well, that happened live at the gig, and I was like, wow, everyone was very quick with that. I didn't see that on TikTok. I was like,
I'm not sure if it originated in the, well, I mean, we can make the assumption that it originated in the UK.
As popularized on TikTok, then we can say.
Yes,
great.
Yeah. That's where I saw it anyway, but I did think it was quite funny.
Yeah, no, it was very funny. Like, I mean, there was the usual ole ole as well, of course, but like that was a new one. That was a new one for me, and I was like, wow.
I'm starting to hate the ole ole thing, about that more later.
There was the box as well, and I think before I get into the nitty-gritty of the actual shows itself, I love going to places like Three Arena now and seeing these big productions, because I think since the pandemic, funny enough, there has been, or maybe it's just coincided with me seeing lots more of those gigs in a big space like that, which is kind of modular and allowed to move things around. I've just been really impressed by the level of detail and precision that's involved in some of the lighting stuff and some of the staging and how it works.
Can I ask, were you standing or sitting?
No, we were sitting. We had really good seats up the front of the seating area, which was great. And I do love that at the 3 ring to be able to look at everything and see it as it is, because it does really lend itself to like just actually watching it, because it's a great show to watch. And yeah, I think it's just like those kind of precision things. Yeah, the COVID box, he came out in this box comes down over his head and these four guys in hazmat suits. And he's like, so the entire show is framed by, on the album, the narrator is Kendrick's wife, Whitney Alford. And she's kind of probing him and guiding him and asking him on to consider his mistakes that he's made and to address them and work past them. And some of those are, you know, these are complicated things. And like, he talks about sex addiction and like having affairs and stuff. And that's, you know, the decision to frame the album with his wife doing that is also a very intimate one as well, because it means that she is involved in his public exploration of their own personal life,
which he's never really done before with a partner or with her, you know.
But on the show, in the live show, it was Helen Mirren who did the voice, and that's she was kind of similar kind of language, but very much echoing like that Mr. Morale, you know, when the COVID box comes in, you've been contaminated, all that kind of stuff, you've forgotten who you are, all this kind of stuff. So it gave us that kind of through line for the show, I think. Overall, I mean, it was very heavy on Mr. Morale in the end. Like, it, all but three songs from the album weren't featured. And there was a lot of room for a lot of his greatest hits. We're talking like, you heard a couple of, not many songs from To Pimp a Butterfly, All Right, and King Kunta were there. The likes of Money Trees and Swimming Pool and Backseat Freestyle. From Good Kid, Mad City was there. There was a fair bit of Damn. Loyalty was there. Some just like a verse and a chorus, maybe sometimes like DNA was not the full one. And same with even the very first track, he comes out and he's sitting at the piano, United in Grief, playing the piano a bit, and he's got this puppet on his shoulder, or on his piano.
And, does he play the piano?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Okay.
And so he gets up and he walks and it's the part of the song where you know that those shuffling beats are going to come in, and he gets to the microphone that's been set up for him and he's holding a puppet and it doesn't come in. And you're like, oh no, it doesn't go there.
Why do you think he did that?
I don't know. But it was like, he really did a lot of that. Like, there was moments where the silence was deafening, as in he allowed the crowd to fill up a good minute and a half of silence and he said nothing. So at the start of that, you know, he's holding this puppet and he's standing stoically and the puppet starts moving, looking at the crowd. But everyone is just shouting at him. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
It kind of gets to the point where it's uncomfortable and you're like, are they, like, he's rarely off stage in an hour and 45 minutes.
Okay.
And because of that, his breathers are basically in public between songs and he spends a lot of time just like just standing there not saying anything, and he doesn't say a lot during the concert other than, you know, I was here 5 years, it's been 5 years since we saw each other, kind of thing, you know, I want to hear your energy, and they're like, nothing major, but a really great set. I think it successfully brings Mr. Morale and weaves it through a lot of what he does with the rest of his albums. Like, there's obviously Humble was there, but you don't get the full one. Element was in there. So yeah, like, it's a 29 song set list and it's completely stuffed with Mr. Morale's songs and then dotted with what sometimes feels like lip service to previous albums. And that's kind of fair enough, because this is the Big Steppers tour. So therefore I can kind of understand why he's not playing the full songs. But sometimes it is like, oh, I wish he'd just play the second verse of DNA or whatever, or like Loyalty, whatever. There's some of those moments, but I think he's just so poised and he's so precise in what he does. And this show makes him feel like the auteur rapper, as I described him. He's like the one, the person who's creating his own worlds and who's bringing only now select collaborators into it. Like, obviously we've talked before, you know, about him like doing crappy guest verses and stuff, and he's awful at that, but he has not done that for a long, long time, right? Because he doesn't need to. And that's great because we don't need any more of that. But that does mean that I think this big Steppers tour feels like a bit of a marker for what comes next, because he's obviously talked about how this album is his last album for Top Dawg Entertainment, and now he's going to go on and do his own thing. He's been developing talent himself. His cousin Baby Keem was on support, two supports, Tana Leone, and which who I missed, and then Baby Keem. And Baby Keem had a great big reaction before he came on, and it was only like he was on from 8:30 to 9:00, and then 15 minutes later Kendrick come on, you know. So it wasn't like a big long wait. It was like he came out and he did it, and then he comes back on for three of his own songs during Kendrick's set near the end. So that was really interesting, because like Family Ties, that great song that Kendrick's on from Melodic Blues, is performed, and
that's a great song.
It was one of the biggest like buzzes of the night, was hearing that for everyone. I think it was really like that's
amazing for him. Yeah, like
there was crowds of people throughout the whole show making mosh pits, creating space for mosh pits that never really materialized, because the songs either stopped or they just didn't kick in what they people thought was going to happen. But when when that happened, when Family Ties happened, that's when it really, you know, it kicked off. It really kicked off then. So that was great.
Awesome.
So yeah, just, I mean, I think if you're talking about, I've seen a lot of talk about how this is the best hip hop show of all time. What I will say is, I mean, it's certainly a brilliant theatrical, crowd-pleasing, but introspective and interesting take on the album, and while bringing in not leaving the greatest hits behind. I mean, he because of the nature of it, because it is quite introspective, I guess for that reason alone, it's probably not going to hit those heights in terms of energy that, say, my paragon for this is the Watch the Throne show, where, you know, you have stupidly like Kanye and Jay-Z performing on plinths in the middle of the crowd to each other, and doing N-Word in Paris, like, what, I think they did it 8 or 9 times at the end of the gig. That kind of like level of silliness that happened in an, they just, you don't really see in an arena that kind
they
of
they did
like,
it 8 or 9 times at the end of a gig.
I think it was 7 or, but in Paris I think they did it like 18 or 19 times in a row or something like that.
What?
But it became this
that.
Like
that's amazing.
You know? No, it became this like this to like, how many times are they going to do it?
And that's class.
It was so cool. But the more they did it, the like the more it got, like you have the same reaction every time it restarts, and then you're like,
yeah,
oh wow, and then it starts again, you're like, no, I don't believe it, and you're like, no, I'm kind of sick of this now, and then it's like, no, do it again.
It's like, it's
actually,
it's,
do you
like
know they only did it like
it...
four times in Dublin is what all they did at that time.
But it's I like think when you have a joke that has a lot of repetition in it, it's funny, and then it becomes unfunny, and then it's unfunny for so
exactly
long that it
like
becomes
that.
Funny
yeah.
again
yeah so it is great. I mean, I think it is a brilliant show, and it's definitely, do you know, I kind of wish I didn't, I kind of wish I'd gone a little bit to see the Drake show or something, just to be, if I had seen the Drake show, I'd just have a marker of what somebody in his field is doing in terms of performance. I know the only thing I can remember about the Drake show, that there was an upside down car. I would imagine it's not as interesting or reaches the level of high art that I saw last week in the Three Arena with Kendrick. But you know, it's just kind of like, I'm like trying to think of who else is doing what he does. You know, it's like, it's kind of like David Byrne in a way. It's like the David Byrne thing of like, constructing this interesting arena show that isn't really a rock one, or in the genre of the music that they're making,
or pop.
So, but it also is very crowd pleasing as well, so I think it was great. It was really good.
Part of me would really respect Kendrick more if he refused to play All Right or King Kunta or any of the old hits, and like only played the new album, you know, just had it as that narrative. But I mean,
he definitely didn't do the whole of King Kunta for sure, but he didn't do the whole of it. But like,
you'd imagine he's probably sick of performing that song at this stage. Like,
yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think you can probably guess what songs he didn't do from the album. The one that closes it with Bette Gibbons, probably the most introspective and slowest one. I couldn't see that really working in a big arena. Maybe he could make it work, but he definitely didn't do it. Obviously, the dead naming problematic track, Anti-Diaries, wasn't got no mention of that. And We Cried Together.
He didn't do Anti-Diaries.
No, he didn't do that. Okay. And We Cried Together.
I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah. Like the back and forth kind of like theatricality of people fighting that's at the core of We Cry Together is referenced at the start of one of the songs and then goes into Purple Hearts. But doesn't, I mean, I don't know if you could, he didn't have anyone else on stage with him to perform.
Yeah,
it,
if he has someone else to perform it, it's good. But yeah. I mean, with Anti-Diaries, it's a good idea not to give people the opportunity to shout the F slur like 4 or 5 times in a crowd. It's probably a good idea.
Yeah. I did have a laugh at one point when, you know, that line in where he's like, he's sitting in at the point in the song, I can't remember which song it is, from Mr. Morale, where he's like, when Kanye got back with Drake, I was slightly confused. So he raps that line, but he's like lying on a lounge chair at that point, and I'm like, he's probably still confused, I'd say. Do you know what I mean? He just looks, he still looks a bit like perplexed about the whole thing. But yeah, look, fantastic. So yeah, I'm not sure there's much more I can say about Mr.
I'm glad that you enjoyed
tour.
It because it's a huge show. And
my friend who I brought, shout out to Ko, he went the next night on his own with his partner to bring, and he brought her because he was like, he wasn't going to, but I brought him and he enjoyed it so much he went back again the next night.
Okay.
So what about your gig experience? How did you get on?
I don't have nearly as much to say about Pavement. On the 10th of November, my mother's birthday, happy birthday, Bernie, which was the Thursday night, which was the first night, not because it wasn't good, but just because I sort of couldn't see anything. It was all like tall men, as you can imagine. But oh my God, what a show. Like, it was a really, really, really great gig. They played like quite a few, you know, like sleeper hits. Like, it was, so I was there with my boyfriend who was a really, really big Pavement fan. And like almost every song that began, Harry was just like, oh my God, they're playing this. I'm so excited. I'm so happy. And like, some I didn't know. I'm a big albums girl when it comes to Pavement. But like, it was such a great show. They had so much energy. They were chatting to each other on stage, kind of nearly as if we weren't there. Like, the stage banter was so unhoned that it was really, really charming, in that they were, you know, interrupting each other and talking over each other and having little kind of pretend arguments and stuff, which was really sweet. And they just played brilliantly with so much energy. Stephen Malcolmus sounds incredible. It was really, really great. And like, everyone around me was just having a really good time. We were down the back and it was, I have to say, a very, very well-behaved concert because, as I've spoken about recently, I've been to a few gigs lately where people have just kind of forgotten how to behave at gigs, and that you don't talk in the middle of a set, especially like a slower song, or, you know, you don't like, you know, hit a person in the head as you're walking past them because you're tall and she's small, or whatever it might be. Just a really, like, everyone that was there, the energy was so palpable. Everyone was so excited. We've waited for this gig for so long. You know, I bought these tickets in, like, I think something like early 2021 or something. They were definitely like a lockdown purchase. I bought them thinking like, I don't know if this gig's ever going to happen because we don't know if gigs are at all are ever going to happen. So yeah, it felt like a really nice, it was the last of my lockdown gig purchases and it was a nice way to kind of round those off. But Yeah, it was a great show. And I know a few people who went to the second night as well. The set list was almost entirely different. And they've been doing that. I've been having a look at their set list throughout this tour. So the second night of Vicar Street was the last night of their tour. And they've been changing the set lists a lot. So it benefited people going the two nights. I got offered a ticket for the second night, but I was just very, very tired, so I didn't go. But yeah, it was great. Really, really enjoyed it. Ran into a few people, which was nice. No exes. as was the thing going around on Twitter of like any woman going to Pavement just having to like duck and dive to like avoid the ex-boyfriend.
What did you call it on Instagram? The men
in their late 30s convention and your ex-boyfriend is here. I got a few messages from people being like, hey, I'm in my 40s and I'm here. Give us some recognition. And I was like, okay, yeah, fair enough. And Alan Maguire, who I was there with, he posted like a little while ago that it might be the gig where the most amount of people are dressed the same, and then followed it up with the confirmation that yes, everybody there was dressed the exact same, and it was very, very sweet. So yeah, it was just really good fun. I can't comment too much on it apart from how it sounded, which was great, because I really could not see very much because I was surrounded by a lot of very tall men. but what I did see was great.
So in terms of live gigs then, I think we are both going to the Mary Oliver's this week, perhaps. And
oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
That is this yes. week. Yeah. And
when is that? What day?
Tomorrow. Lives in Thursday, this Thursday, National Stadium. Hi.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Breaking news.
Someone else has my ticket and they never reminded me about it. Oh, okay. Well,
you'll get a reminder shortly. will we leave the world of live music for a minute before we come back to it? Because I want to talk about secondary ticketing in a bit. But the other news that came out this week was the very important, not important at all. Previously, we've talked about this at length, but we're going to talk about it again briefly because it's the Grammys, lads. It's the Grammys. They are so weird. The Grammys
it's
are
the
so
most
weird.
Most important time in music.
Most important time of the year. It's to show you how old-fashioned and out of touch the Grammys are once again. Where do we start? Where do we start with this? How about the best alternative music album, which the writer Jill Krasowski wrote.
Sorry, that wasn't about, I was groaning yeah. there, not about the writer Jill Krasowski, but
so,
about
good news.
To talk about.
Yeah, good news. Every single one of the alternative Grammy nominations features women at the small cost of honoring a serial abuser, allegedly. That is, the best alternative music albums are Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs, Cool It Down, Wet Leg, Bjork, Fasora, Big Thief, Dragon, New War, Mountain, I Believe in You, and Arcade Fire, Wii. As if you weren't sure that cancel culture was actually just like some thing that actually didn't exist, you can be sure when you look at the Grammys, because there are also nominations for Chris Brown and Louis C.K. once again. And what else do you need to know about the Grammys? What else do you need to know?
How good can Louis C.K.'s current stuff be? Like, genuinely, I feel like if it was good enough to be nominated for a Grammy within the context of where his career is right now, like, it would want to be quite literally the funniest comedy that anyone has ever made. And I haven't heard a single person discuss it. Like, it gets to the stage where you're like, is there another category of representation that these people are worrying about? And they're like, oh, well, we should platform at least one abuser per category, yeah. allegedly. Sorry, like alleged abusers. But like, do you know what I mean? It's like, how good can it actually be? The yeah. same with Arcade Fire. I'm like, that's not a good album.
No, it's not. But that's what the Grammys love. The Grammys love big statements, that kind of big empty gestures. That's what it's all about. So it loves albums like We, which,
and it loves a nice campaign from the label, as we know. Honestly, for any listeners who haven't heard me explain the Grammys to Niall, I think it's my greatest work, personally speaking. It's the podcast episode.
PhD.
It is like the most proud of anything I've ever been. So please do go and listen to that because the Grammys are wild.
How to Win a Grammy, that one, that episode.
It's called How to Win a Grammy. I talk you through how to win a Grammy. Not many people have taken us up on it. I think it was in 2020. So, but I mean, yeah, so I'm looking through the nominations here. And I mean, you know, abusers aside, it's all a bit of fun to kind of just look back and see whose label believe in them. ABBA's label believe in them for Record of the Year, Don't Shut Me Down, which is a...
And the album.
Which is a good song. It's a nice ABBA song. It's a nice to have, as people say in business. Easy on Me by Adele for Record of the Year as well. Break My Soul, Beyonce. Beyonce got a lot of
So Beyonce's album is also nominated. Well, first of all, she's now tied her husband, Jay-Z, for most Grammy nominations of all time.
Yeah.
So 9 new nominations this year, which means she has 88 in total.
Jesus Christ.
So a lot. Nominations for this year include Album of the Year, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and then many other categories, include Best Dance Album, she's in Best R&B Performance. There's so many she's in there for. What else have we got? Yeah, I always love looking at the Best Dance Electronic Album. Always gives me a bit of a laugh because it's like Diplo and somebody like this is Rufus Du Sol is always in there, like somebody that I've never heard of. It's just in a particular American take on dance electronic music, and it's like, okay, cool. Well, Bonobo's in there, I guess. That's cool. But then Beyonce's in there. That's not a... I mean, I don't know if you can categorize that as a dance electronic album, but sure, let Beyonce take up that space that somebody else could have. In terms of Album of the Year,
I don't mind Renaissance being in there for dance electronic, to be honest. I don't mind it. I think, like, because of what the album is and what it's doing.
But she's taking up the room from the Chainsmokers. The Chainsmokers could be in there.
Justice for the Chainsmokers. Justice for the Chainsmokers. Best Rock Performance is one that I always like looking at. Ozzy Osbourne featuring Jeff Beck, always on the pulse, the Grammys. Beck, Old Man.
I didn't even know that song.
Those rockers. Brandi Carlile, Bryan Adams. It's stunning. Best Metal Performance, Ghost, Megadeth, Muse, Ozzy Osbourne again, and Turnstile.
Muse
for metal. It might be a metal song. I have not listened to a Muse song since 2008.
I'll let you out with that one.
I don't know. Who else have we got?
We've got Best Rap Album. Kendrick Lamar's in there along with Pusha T, and Future and DJ Khaled. But the sore thumb sticking out there is Jack Harlow, Come Home, The Kids Miss You. He's not great, that fella. And he's probably going to win it. We're going to get the Macklemore situation all over again, probably.
Interesting with Kendrick Lamar, The Heart Part 5 nominated for Best Rap Performance.
Yeah, I gotta think that was like a decision that was made by the label to pick that song.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So
like
you nominate the song or you put forward the song.
Same with Taylor
Swift,
and it's
also nominated
All Too Well.
for Record of the Year. So The Heart Part 5 obviously not on Mr. Morale and the Big Stepper, which I think was a mistake.
It is actually listed as the third disc on the album now.
That's true, on Spotify. Did he play it at the show?
No, but yeah, some of the visuals on stage did do a little bit of the face morphing stuff
It's one of the best songs he's made in years. I think it's a really, really great song.
But he never performs those The Heart versions live.
No, he doesn't.
Anything, he just the Lucy's.
Music of the Spheres by Coldplay, Album of the Year. Can you imagine if they won that against Harry Styles, Harry's House, Kendrick Lamar, Lizzo Special, Mary J. Blige, Good Morning Gorgeous, Deluxe version, Beyonce Renaissance, Bad Bunny, Adele, and ABBA, and Brandi Carlile as well. Best New Artist. Do you have that list in front of you?
I do, yeah. Anitta from Brazil, Dami and JD Beck, Lato, Money
Long. So who do you know from this?
I've heard some of them. Do you know what? I think I don't know them all, but there's a guy in there called Toby Nwegwe, and he is great. He had a song with Pharrell not too long ago. He does a lot of visual stuff. I wouldn't say I know that much of his stuff, but I think what he's doing is really interesting. At one point, he was releasing a song every Sunday and a video as well, which is very cool. And I think he's doing some really interesting stuff. But also some stuff is fine. It's a lot of it, but I think definitely a really interesting artist. I wrote about him recently. Yeah, let me see where he's from again. Him and his wife do a lot of stuff from their house as well. And I was just really impressed. I heard a song came up in August from him, actually, featuring Pharrell and one of the guys from Earth Gang as well, called Lord Forgive Me. I think it's like, unfortunately, they took it down now, but I mean, sometimes it's good when, you know, you hear a track on Spotify and you hear it because you're following one of the other artists. But some really interesting choreographed music videos going on there. So yeah, he seems really interesting as well. And then Wet Legger in there, for some people, a good one, some people a bad one. That band Maneskin that were on the Eurovision, they're in there as well. People love that band.
I don't know any of their music. I just know that they're Maneskin all really so popular. Because they're all really hot and the gays love them.
Okay.
And that's, I mean, maybe their music is really good as well. I don't know. But I like them because they're all hot and really cool.
Okay. Sometimes that's all you need.
Professional music journalist, Andrea Cleary. Song of the Year, DJ Khaled featuring Rick Ross, Lil Wayne, Jay-Z, John Legend, and Friday, God Did. Have you heard that song?
Do you know, I think I did try the week that it came out on the Friday to be like, go on, I'll listen to this DJ Khaled album. And I just
like the verb to try.
It's like, it was called God Did. I was like, I just feel like he's basically making music in his own version of AI at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
interesting with Taylor Swift, Song of the Year, All Too Well, 10-minute version, the short film. We expect that this has been, or the Swifties suspect that it will be nominated for Best Short at the Oscars, or that it has been it has been, what do you call it, put forward by her team for that. Maybe Taylor wants to be an EGOT, but yeah. So the 10-minute version, the short film, has been nominated for Song of the Year, but I mean, I imagine you'll have to take the film part of it out. But the 10-minute version of that song is a masterpiece, so I think it's well deserved being there.
You should go to the Taylor Swift club night, Andrea. That's what you should do.
What?
My friend,
what is that?
Anna Jacob does it once a month in the Grand Social. It's on Friday night. It's called Swiftageddon, and you go. And it's Taylor Swift all night. And there's literally a room where you like put down your request and they play it.
Unreal.
So there you go.
Yeah. Swift it's on again. This Friday?
I think so. It's on like once
busy
a month.
This Friday. Next month. I will definitely go next month. That sounds amazing. I've seen clips from like Taylor Swift nights again on TikTok, and people play, like, you know that scene? You watch Euphoria, didn't you?
Yeah.
You know that scene when she's like, you dumb fucking bitch, and she's like doing this with her nails, and for some reason, like, a lot of these nights play that scene, and then it goes into a Taylor Swift song, and I've always looked at it and been like, I'd like to be there. That looks like fun.
There you go.
But yeah, I'll do that. I'll go to that.
Did you notice there was one Irish nomination that I noticed? Pretty far down to find it. It's the best album notes, Andy Irvin and Paul Brady by Gareth Murphy. I don't know. Do you know Gareth Murphy? Album notes writer for that album anyway. So there you go.
My dream to win a Grammy for best liner notes.
Best liner notes.
I've never written any liner notes for anyone. If anyone wants them,
Gareth Murphy wrote a book called Cowboys and Indies.
I've heard of
history
book,
of the record industry. Very good, very good. Cool. He
actually
went through a journal of music or not.
On the Grammys as we get it. I think we probably should cover it just because it's fun, and I just think the Grammys are so they're such nonsense, but they're quite fun, and you usually get some good performances out of it as well.
And then people snubbing it and giving out and all the usuals.
Oh, it's just
they just
like,
keep adding categories as well. You're like, what?
Yeah,
changing
it's like
things.
How fashion people feel about the Met Gala is how I feel about the Grammys. It's just it's messy. Like there's cool outfits and performances. People will be drunk. There's behind the scenes. There's gossip. There's people showing up or not showing up. It's fab. I love it. Yeah.
Very good. Before we continue, I just want to say, if you like what we're doing here and you want to support us and you want to join the community, the 909 community, which happens on Discord, it's patreon.com/909, where you'll get access to our Discord and exclusive playlists and little bits. And at the moment, I know you've bowed out of the Music League currently, but
no. But I'm going to join for the next season, is it? Or there's a new
next league. Yeah, there was next a really round. Lovely round this week called Arcane Hits, which was basically songs from artists that had less than 10,000 followers or listeners on Spotify.
Oh, brilliant!
It was a really interesting one. It was a good one to do because it was just. Yeah, it was different. It was a different buzz, and I really enjoyed it. I picked there's actually plenty of them. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing. There is, but it is hard to pick them these days. It is hard to pick ones, but I really enjoyed listening to that list. It was really nice. Like somebody on Discord described it as kind of a college radio hour kind of thing. It was all like songs you'd never heard, and like there were songs from Ships and people like that in there. I picked Still Blue, new Irish band, who do very lovely melodic indie, a great track. Anyway, just to say that is in there, those are in there. And this morning, Colm from Discord put up a screenshot of what we're going to talk about next, which is our next story, which is Taylor Swift and the ticketing drama that's currently engulfing Ticketmaster as ever and Live Nation. So yesterday, as we speak, millions of Taylor Swift fans swarmed onto Ticketmaster after getting their pre-registration links and pre-sale links and all that stuff to try and get tickets for her first tour in 5 years. And the one thing that isn't supposed to happen with Ticketmaster happened when Taylor Swift got involved. Obviously, Taylor's has the most streamed artist in a single day on Spotify when Midnights came out, and she appears to have done it again. There was 52 dates announced for the US. I think most of the East Coast dates went on sale first, and that is when Ticketmaster absolutely collapsed into a heap from the demand of people trying to get onto it. There was long. It's so crazy how it works now, you know, like you have to, there's like a number of checks, and especially with Taylor Swift, you know, in the past she has done, you buy the album, you get the pre-sale, you get this pre-sale, you do this, you do this. There's a lot of hoops to jump through, pre-registration, all that kind of stuff. And then when you actually get onto it now, there's a waiting, like a queue system. And
Taylor Swift's so big. It's like, does she need to use Ticketmaster? Surely she could just build her own system to allow fans to
well, that's
buy.
The thing. You would think the main reason to use Ticketmaster for somebody like Taylor Swift, regardless of anything else, is the fact that you know the infrastructure isn't going to break. But she has broken it. So you're like, well, you may as well have set up your own one at this point. You know, like,
yeah, she should. Yeah. Like, I think buying directly from artists should be, like, in terms of tickets, should be way more common with bigger artists, because like we can buy straight from artists, you know, for like a show in Dublin or something.
Very rarely though, really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's getting rarer, but it's possible.
Their infrastructure is not really there for those big artists. I mean, obviously everyone wants a piece of Taylor's pie. She doesn't seem to mind.
She's a multi-millionaire. Build it and they will come.
Historically unprecedented demand, apparently. So that's what happened. I mean, these were just for the pre-sale tickets. So these weren't even for the general sales. So fans reported waiting in online queues for up to 8 hours. And many finding they did actually miss them. Tickets were already between $49 and $449 each, depending on where you were sitting or where you were looking for. The Ticketmaster system that they employ for Taylor Swift is selected as it's verified fans. It's supposedly set up to deter bots and scalpers. And this is where the issue is, because... While people were waiting in those 8-hour queues, all of these tickets for these gigs started appearing on re-hit sales sites such as StubHub for as much as $22,000 and up.
Just say
and
that
beyond.
Again, Niall, just in case anyone misheard you.
Yes, the Taylor Swift tickets were going on sale on StubHub for as much as $22,700. Actually,
US dollars.
US dollars. Taylor Swift, 24th of March, 2023, is what Colm shared in the Discord today. Section 421, which is in an arena, is pretty far away, is going for 92,187, according to this screenshot. Now,
sir.
Obviously, I mean, I had that line. We all have that line around. I mean, obviously, it's going to happen. You just, oh, shit, I accidentally bought that Taylor Swift ticket for nearly 100 grand each there. Oh, well,
God
at least
almighty,
at least I have a good view. No, you're pretty much bird's eye away from the stage as far as I can see here. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's you're behind the
if
stage.
If every
actually.
One of your followers on Twitter gave you €2, you'd be able to afford it.
There you go. There you
and
go.
You'd have a few bob for a drink.
Yeah. So, I mean, then what they decided to do is hold on and reschedule some of the ticket sales for the West Coast shows to kind of relieve the pressure. And another pre-sale was due to go on sale today. I'm not sure if that's gone yet. It might be on right now. There was a funny one. There was, I think the Guardian article quoted a guy from the Next Draft newsletter called Dave Pell. And he wrote this, he failed to get tickets. And he said, I'm a failure as a father. The one time my daughter really needed me to come through for her, I ended up on the outside looking in, banished to the barren badlands of the Taylor Swift ticket waiting list wasteland. So, yeah. Look,
poor
I don't
guy.
Know what's going to happen
poor
with
daughter.
These. But I mean, obviously, somebody, I feel like the problem here is that there is, if there is tickets, which there appears to be on StubHub, that is the problem in the first place, not the... No one is going to pay those prices for it, so they inevitably will come
down.
But
that's the thing, right? Literally nobody, even if you had $92,000, even if you were a millionaire, that was if you had that amount of money, you wouldn't need to pay $92,000. Like there's no conceivable like instance in which anybody would pay that money. So like what happens with that? You know,
it's like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, it is like, what is it there for? How does this work? We've seen it recently.
Is it so that like somebody accidentally buys it?
It kind of feels like that, doesn't it? It's
and
like
they've got 92
chancer.
Grand in their current account because they've been saving for a mortgage or something. And,
yeah.
It just comes out. Can you imagine? Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've heard of things like that happening before with large amounts of coming out on a tap accidentally. So those kind of things can happen. But I mean, recently you've seen Adele with her Vegas residency, which is starting this Friday. It's called Weekends with Adele. It was after being rescheduled from earlier this year. There were tickets going on StubHub for that in the lower area of the theater from anywhere from $8,000 up to $32,000. Now, I did some look into this myself this week before the podcast and using an LVPN and having to look at it. And so Friday's Vegas Adele show, the cheapest tickets going currently are $550 and the most expensive is $23,500, which is right in front of the stage. So there clearly are tickets there. This is a Vegas show. It's happening in 2 days on Friday and they are there. They are absolutely there. So, I mean, I guess, you know, and you saw then like people like AOC saying, daily reminder that Ticketmaster is a monopoly. It's a merger with Live Nation, should never have been approved and they need to be reined in. So I think I would like to just kind of briefly discuss a bit more about the secondary ticket market, because we haven't discussed it for a while because essentially we had COVID and there wasn't really much talk about that. Now, last year we did have an announcement about Irish, the government approving a ticket touting bill and banning the resale of tickets. I'll get into that in a bit. But first, I did an article about StubHub in 2017 and they entered the Irish market in 2017. I wrote an Irish Times article for it. Now, when they entered, they already had a interesting development happening in the UK at the same time. They were raided in the UK by the Competition and Markets Authority after they failed to disclose information requested as part of an investigation into online ticket touting. They had a top seller program, and one of these top sellers was a Canadian multimillionaire ticket broker called Julian Lavallee. who claimed to have deals with promoters and venues for tickets in exchange for yearly fees. And he was in the Paradise Papers around that time, where he was mentioned in the use of offshore tax havens. So, you know, this is already like dodgy ways to set up. So this was 2017 when they came to Ireland, and I met the manager of StubHub UK and Ireland about this, and he didn't feel it was appropriate to talk about what was going on in the UK. But there were suggestions there, like at the time, so Viagogo, StubHub, Get Me In, and Seatwave were the four main companies. I think now it's Viagogo and StubHub that are left and operating in Ireland for sure. So it's interesting to note that I think, you know, there was the issue there at the time was that there was exorbitant prices on these tickets that people really wanted. And then since then, what we've seen is, I think you see a lot more of these segmenting of tickets into the pre-sale market, where you're like, there's a pre-sale for the promoter, there's a pre-sale for the artist, pre-sale for, you know, the mobile phone company. So it's never quite clear how many like tickets are actually on general sale. So you kind of like pre-sale tickets have become the norm in the way to get tickets. I'd imagine a pre-sale makes up of a lot of the percentage at this point of most big in-demand tickets. So maybe something like those Taylor Swift gigs, we can't know.
Yeah.
But you would imagine that could be anything up to 60-70% for pre-sales.
But I mean, think about the amount of people in Ireland who are with Three, for example, the phone company Three. And like if every one of those people buy a pre-sale ticket that they have access to, you know, like it's amazing that they managed to do that and still kind of that there's still tickets that go on general sale for really, really big artists, you know. It's a really weird one, you know. Can I just ask for clarity for myself? The bill about secondary ticket selling in Ireland, was that passed or was it just brought to the Dáil?
Apparently it was passed, but the reason I want to talk about that and mention it, because I think even at the time it wasn't clear what was going on with it. So on the surface, it appeared to be a very good thing, banning ticket touting and the resale of tickets above 10% of face value. But I think the issue seemed to be that it required the event organizer or the event promoters or the venue itself to apply for the designation. So you didn't have to do it. So it kind of became this useless situation where like it wasn't mandatory. Therefore, why would anyone do it? Therefore, whatever. Like,
but if it's not mandatory, it's not a law then. You can't opt in and
out. No, it's like, yeah, I think that was the idea and it doesn't really make sense. So it was like, it's like throwing an invisible lasso around the ticketing market and going, see, we did something. And then you're like, well, you didn't actually do anything because none of these have changed. So here, I had a look at StubHub there today, and other than the American one where the Adele front row ticket is going for $23,000, the Irish one, let's have a look at that. Let's have a look here. Like, there's not much really even active on it. There's Celine Dion tickets, right, going, there's one here for the 30th of March 2023 that says from €1,500, €500 for Dublin. There's an Elton John gig on sale on StubHub right now. Ticket price is £344, £440. Where are those tickets coming from? Who's trying to sell them? It's not quite clear. StubHub, in the past, when I remember when I talked to them, they said, we want every seller has to show like who they are and where it's coming from. But
no, you don't. Like, no,
that's
like,
what they wanted, they said. But I can't see that now. That's not there easily. And if it is, it's hidden. So where are these tickets for £440 for a gig coming from? Closer to home, let's look at this, right? So Viagogo.ie. There is currently a Gillaband gig happening on the 9th of December 2022 in the National Stadium. And you can get tickets for the general areas, actually, from £30 right now. But for some reason on Viagogo, there's tickets up there for £76. Why is that? You know? Why are those? I'm sure Gillaband had no idea that this was happening. So who's putting those tickets up? It says there's 16, 18... there's 24 tickets apparently going for £76 each on Viagogo. So where did those tickets come from? who's putting them up? Are they real? Are the bands aware of this? Most of the time you feel like they're not, and when they do, it's quickly discovered sometimes and it gets taken down when somebody like Ed Sheeran talks about it. But I don't know. I mean,
that's like, the thing as well, is that I have never bought a ticket from StubHub. Like, any kind of secondary selling that or buying that I've done have been through the Ticketmaster platform, because they have a really good resale thing where you can put someone else's name on the ticket and so on. I'm sure
I mean,
loads
in fairness,
of people have done it.
One like, great thing that they've done in the last number of years is the resale.
It's brilliant. And it's really easy. Like, it's, and because we live in a time of COVID, you know, you have to be able to sell your ticket at the last minute, if needs be, if you come down with COVID or whatever happens. So that's a really great feature that they've introduced. But so that's the only kind of, you know, secondary resale thing, or, you know, from a mate or someone on Twitter or whatever. But I've never gone on, like, parting with anything over 30 quid. I'd really want to know, you know, and I feel like if I went onto StubHub and I say I really wanted to go to Gillaband and it was like 75 or 80 quid or something, I wouldn't be willing to part with that money without evidence that that ticket is real. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. And you know, funny enough, my pal who came along to Kendrick was waiting outside for me, and he said there was a guy, a ticket out outside, and he was literally bringing people up to the door with tickets, as in to get them in.
With physical tickets or on
yeah,
phone?
Appears to be. So I wonder, like, where does he get them? Who? What happens there? Are they real? If they are, is somebody scamming the door? Is, like, you know, I mean, I can't know what was happening there. I wasn't there myself, so I can't see that. But, like, you know, if people are coming up, like, where are those tickets coming from? Are they coming from a premium club? Is it coming from a members thing? Like, if that is happening, and I can't verify that for sure, but if those situations are happening, how are they happening? Mm-hmm. How is the gig like the Three Arena? Where are those tickets going? And that's, I think this comes back to the, like, obviously promoters in there don't want to be fully transparent in terms of how many tickets are being sold for gigs, because, you know, sometimes tickets aren't selling that well. And that maybe just compounds the fact that people might not sell tickets or might not buy tickets at last minute. And I think that does seem to be happening now at the moment very often, is that people will wait till the last minute to buy tickets. And that's obviously understandable, because you're not sure if you're going to have 70 quid. And it's like, we've seen it this week in the Discord where somebody was like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to go to this Kendrick gig. And then they go because, you know, the hype is there and you're like, yeah, it's good, you should really go, and you're like, you're interested anyway, so you go. So yeah, a lot to ponder there. And I think it's been a while since we talked about that, and obviously in the context of secondary ticketing, there's and the live music industry, there's clearly a lot of problems going on at the moment, as we've discussed before, with the cost of living and Brexit and all of the things that are contributing to high rising costs. If you want to look at something, an indication, I think anyone out there who's interested in how bad is it out there for live music, go on to Ticketmaster, go on and just scroll the concerts and have a look at how many of them are cancelled. There's a lot of cancelled gigs out there from international touring bands, whether they're, it means they can't afford to be here, the tickets aren't selling, or whatever it is, they decided not to do it right now because of the uncertainty. There's a lot of tickets, just a lot of shows quietly cancelled without an announcement in the last, it's happening, ongoing at the moment, you know? So, you know, they're all for different reasons, but at the same time.
And we talked a bit about this with Richie Egan, Jape last week, about the kind of the pressures and the stress of touring with a band as well, and that a lot of people are touring, you know, with a much more stripped down kind of set, or just somebody with a guitar or whatever. So if people want to hear that chat, that's on last week's episode. But yeah, the live industry, like, it's just, God, it is. And I think we said this we've said this a couple of times, it's just, it's the nexus of all of these, you know, seemingly unrelated things, like Brexit and the pandemic and cost of living and the war and just a lot of stuff happening at the same time. And it's just, it's battering them, like, and as well, you know, having to donate a lot or to pay a load of your like merch money to venues as well, which is something that I only found out about like during COVID when people start talking about it. And you know,
and that's much been much more obvious, right?
Yeah, well. And people, you get
bands have been much more vocal about it.
There are bands who are selling merch from their car outside the venue instead of doing it inside, and like, you know, fair play to them.
Who was it last week that gave out about the Olympia, said they wouldn't be selling merch there?
Oh, I didn't see anywhere in Ireland.
Yeah, no, it was somebody about the Olympia said they weren't going to be selling their merch there.
I'd like to look into what the story is with different venues in Ireland, actually.
You know, a Whelan's don't charge anything. Yeah. They just give you a little space and all that.
Yeah.
So always a good place to do it. Other than that. It's tough to know. Yeah, it's tough to know. I must see who that was now last week.
Yeah, it's a good idea to kind of look into this and find this out, because, you know, we obviously want our venues to stay open, and we obviously want our venues to earn money. But, you know, venues are earning money off the bar. Venues are earning money, a bit of the money from the tickets. Like,
yeah,
there has to be something to just support the artists. And that's what merch is supposed to be.
So Peter Hook actually who put up that message originally saying, I'm not going to be selling, but the original tweet is now gone.
Okay.
He said, Olympia Theatre, due to very high commission rate, 25% plus VAT charged on merchandise. So he wouldn't be doing it, but that's not there anymore. So maybe him saying maybe that has reduced it, you know?
Okay.
I mean, I get it. Like, a lot of time the costs of, like, that 25% sometimes goes on like literal staff there for people to sell it for you, so you don't have to do it yourself. And I think that's always tough as well. Like, do you bring somebody on tour with you to do it? Most people probably do, but often those big events have, you know, companies that come in and do and run those things. You know, everyone that comes in to run, like Kendrick as well. Kendrick had like a tote bag for like 35-40 quid and a t-shirt for 40 quid, you know, like
were they
a
nice?
Bucket half for 40 quid. They're fine. Yeah. I mean, they were grand, but like a hoodie for 80 quid, you know what I mean? Like, they're inflated prices anyway. So, and the bigger gig that gets played, the larger the price for that, because there's a bigger commission. There's more work involved. It's not like Kendrick is throwing his merch into a van and bringing it with him. You know, it's probably on a truck and there's a company to handle it in every city. So, I mean, those are the challenges of those things.
Yeah,
so,
and that's a supply chain thing where everybody along the way has to get paid. So, you know, it is a business. It's called the music business for a reason. But like, you know, again, it always comes back to the artists, like smaller artists, up and coming artists, just being screwed out of being able to make a living, you know, because they're expected to just, I don't know, that it's a vocation. And they should just be happy to be able to do it. But yeah. Do you have a lighter note for us?
Do I have a lighter note for us to finish on?
Well, we need a reason to be cheerful, actually.
Okay.
Okay, let's find one.
Desperately seeking.
Reason to be cheerful.
Well, you know, I mean, there has been a lot of good gig announcements the last couple of weeks. Channel Trey, looking forward to seeing him. He's playing soon. Other Voices coming up. Can't wait to go back to Dingle.
Can't wait for
That's
Dingle.
A big one. Thinking about that a lot. Really looking forward to that.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah, Dingle's going to be great. Kick off Christmas.
We're nearly there.
Yeah.
Christmas is nearly happening. Yeah. And then, you know, before we know it, we'll be doing our end of year. It won't be long.
Andrea's most stressful time of the year. Yeah, that's true.
All true December, we'll be doing the best of the year, our best albums, best songs, and our podcast and our awards, whatever they may be.
Yeah. Podcast awards are, I think, the best episodes of the year.
It's when we let loose.
It's good. It's good fun.
Maybe we'll think of something else to let loose with next week. In case.
Yeah. And podcast@nylon9.com if you have anything that you would like to suggest us talking about.
Yeah, if you have any comments on the secondary ticketing market.
If you have any comments on that,
we want to hear from you.
Or anything else. Because we are at the stage of the year where we're looking towards end of year stuff and there's not much stuff being released. So if you have a topic for us, we'd like that, please. Thank
you. If you want to do our work for us,
please do.
Send us an email.
Yeah. Or if you just have any questions or comments in general. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Well, that's it from us this week, I think. We leave it there. So, Andrea, thanks so much.
Thank you, Niall.
I love the sideways angle you're giving me this week.
I look like a YouTuber.
Yeah, because you're like, it looks like you're playing a game or something, or you're doing something more interesting off screen.
If I go like this, I can be like playing a game.
Yeah.
People can't see me do that, but
you're not head on.
No. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's it from
us. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the 909 podcast. Talk to you soon.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.